I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The Intercooler podcast is sponsored by JBR Capital, one of the UK's leading car finance specialists. Now, we only partner with like-minded organisations who really understand what it means to be a car enthusiast, and JBR Capital is a perfect fit for us. It's run by people who really love cars, and importantly, vehicle finance is all JBR Capital does. That alone is what the company exists to do. So whether you're looking to fund a classic, sports car, supercar or hypercar, see what JBR Capital can do for you. And it's not just about very high-end, expensive unobtainium. In fact, the minimum borrowing is £25,000 and the average, £80,000. Head to JBR Capital on social media or jbrcapital.com online and tell them the Intercooler sent you. Right, let's get on with this week's podcast. Welcome to the Intercooler podcast.
Hi everybody. This is the last episode of 2021. I'm Dan Prosser with Andrew Frankel. Now, Andrew, this is the final episode.
Yeah, we're going to give ourselves a week off, aren't we?
Yay! We are. I mean, it's been a busy year, hasn't it? It's been a busy year for us and also for sort of the car world as a whole. So I think this is going to be a fairly reflective episode of the TI podcast.
We're going to look forward a little bit as well, aren't we? I hope
we will. We'll do a little bit of that, but I mean, hopefully, this episode has a sort of end of term feel because I always feel that way at this time of year when we're sort of going into the last couple of working days of the year, and everything is just a little bit of a struggle. I find knocking out the last few bits of work. So this is going to be a fairly low key one, just looking back at the previous 12 months, and as you say, looking forward just a little bit. So should we sort of start off with some highlights of the year? I mean, we could talk about us a little bit, can't we? We can talk about the Intercooler. It was way back at the start of the year that we rebranded from Drive Nation to the Intercooler.
Like 5 years ago to me now.
Yeah, it's a distant memory, isn't it?
So were we still calling it DN this year?
I think it's around February time that we changed it.
So, you know, I still have such fond memories of Drive Nation. In fact, the company that does everything that we do is still called Drive Nation Media, isn't it?
And
it always will be. And I have such a soft spot. I have such happy memories of, you know, you and I having those early meetings and, you know, just talking about creating something, you know, which could be really, really easily accessed, but was at the same time a thing of quality and a thing of which, you know, you, I, and in time anybody else who might work for it could be proud of. That kind of just, it's like sort of making a snowman, isn't it? You start with a little you know, a flake of snow, and you roll it a bit, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, lo and behold, the next thing you know, you've got podcasts and apps and Instagram sites. And that's even before we discuss what we're going to do next year, which is a whole other conversation, but not very much, I should say, we're going to have now. But we might give you a little taster. But we have, whatever we've achieved in the past, there's a sight more ahead of us than there is behind, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
So we hope.
Okay. Well, do you know what? Let's just cover that off briefly. We're not going to say loads because it's very early days. But we have, just in the last few days, actually, signed with a brilliant agency to help us deliver the Intercooler Phase 2. And the sort of headline news as we step from Phase 1 to Phase 2 is that we will have a full all singing, all dancing website to complement the app. The app will continue and we'll have a website to sit along with it. And the whole point about it really is, well, A, it makes us more visible. That's a big part of it. But also B, it's all about adding convenience for our subscribers, isn't it? So you said it just now, we wanted to make really high quality car and motorsport journalism just as readily available as any other type of content out there. And having an app helps us do that. Having a really great website helps us do that. So, yeah, it's an important step as we just improve the offering, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and the agency, I'm not going to go into great details, but we spent so long looking for the right people to work with. We spoke to so many really good agencies who, you know, have stellar reputations and were, you know, very keen to work with us. And then these guys popped up. And the difference with them, other than obviously, you know, they tick all the boxes in terms of their creative brains and, you know, and everything that we need them to do. But they're a bunch of petrol heads and they knew about us. You know, they knew about, you know, they were following DN from day one. They're among our earliest subscribers to the app. And we didn't have to explain anything, did we? He just said, yeah, well, of course, you know, you do this and, you know, you need to do that. So this is what we can do. And so it's very, very early days. We've only just got the ball rolling. But yeah, at some stage, hopefully in the earlier part of next year, that'll roll out. And that also, it just gives us so much more scope to do other stuff, doesn't it? So, yeah, very, very excited about that. It's a bit scary. Because it still has to subscribe to the same values. It's got to be right, isn't it? And, you know, neither you nor I will let it appear until it is. But when it does, hopefully it'll be another big step for us.
Yeah. So to the chap who made the introduction, thank you very much.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, appreciate
brilliant.
It.
Brilliant. Well, okay, so as we're talking about 2022 rather than 2021, I also just want to say that for the last almost 3 years, a big chunk of my time has been taken up working for Pistonheads. And I love working for Pistonheads. When I was, I think, 18, maybe 19, one of the first pieces I ever got paid to write was for Pistonheads. And on and off throughout my writing career, I've contributed. So it's always a pleasure to be associated with Pistonheads. However, from the end of this month, I will be ending that association purely because I'm going full-time with the Intercooler. And so it's big enough now and there's enough momentum and there's enough going on with it now that it's just demanding more of our time, isn't it? So I'm giving up, with a heavy heart actually, giving up my Pistonhead stuff and just committing fully to the Intercooler, which is a significant step. And it just means that apart from sort of managing and overseeing this new website project of ours, I'll have more time to do more video stuff, to do much more on social media, to do more with this podcast. So, yeah, I mean, if we thought that 2021 was a big year for the Intercooler, next year is going to dwarf it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, well, 2021 was huge for the Intercooler because it came into being.
It became the Intercooler. Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, there's probably some tortures analogy about, you know, it having been in nappies in 2021 and in 2022 is the year that it gets up and walks or runs, or who knows. But yeah, it's we're very excited. We should probably stop banging on about ourselves now, though, or the Intercooler, certainly, and talk about, I don't know, cars.
So let's have it. This, in 2021, you bought a Caterham.
Oh, I did.
And you've spoken about it a bit before, but
yeah,
I think it's at this time of year, it's just worth reflecting on the first few months of ownership of your lovely Seven. Is it still running at this time of year?
Yeah, I was out in it about, well, not that recent, about 10 days ago, I suppose.
Very good.
And in fact, I was going to go out in it at the weekend and I can't remember what happened. Oh, I know exactly what happened. Yeah, no, the need to collect the Christmas tree happened. So that was the Land Rover rather than the Caterham. yeah, it's... I still just love the simplicity about it. And it's everything I need in a car. And it's a, whatever it is, it's a 24-year-old 1.7-litre bit of Ford cast iron motor. And yet... everything I want a car to do in terms of the way it delivers its performance and the way that it handles it, the way that it goes, stops and steers, I don't need anything else. I know, and this is the joy that I know whenever I like, I can just, for what is a very, very reasonable amount of money, sitting in my shed right now, there's a car, I can just go out and I know I'm going to love driving it. And that to me is the privilege of having something at your disposal, whenever you like, that you know every time you're going to get in it, it's going to be an occasion. It's going to be an adventure. You're going to come back full of happiness and joy and adrenaline pumping and everything else. And everything that I love about cars is in that car. And yeah, it's in my shed now. And I'm just really, really, really happy and pleased to have it. And presumably... your love for the A110 remains undiminished.
It does. And actually, what I found, and this is a very obvious thing to say. So the difference, I guess the key difference between my car and yours is that mine is my everyday car. It's my only car. And so it does have to do all the boring stuff as well. And given what it is, it does that really well. But it's very easy for it just to fall into that role alone. Because... if you don't make the effort to get out in it and go for a really good, worthwhile drive on great roads, you find that you only use it for motorway journeys, for bombing around town, for commuting, whatever. And it's just such a terrible shame to allow a car like that to just fall into that kind of use case.
Does it still always feel special? Or do you just... does it ever get to a stage where it's just what you get about the place in? And when you get in it, you don't... think about how beautifully it steers or how it rides or the handling. It's just a device for doing a job.
It doesn't get to that point. There's a danger that you start to get to that point, but I haven't yet because I just it always does feel a bit special and I love just seeing it. But what I've really noticed is that I can spend a week in a press car, and for instance, this happened when I had a Range Rover Sport SVR Ultimate. Actually, I had that car for 2 weeks. So I did 500-600 miles in it. And then I stepped back into my car and just in a split second, it all just feels right. And I'm just happy to be back in something low and light and small. As you say, something that steers beautifully, something that has balance. Even just pulling out of my car park and driving around the corner, it just feels right. But I think the key thing to owning a car, any kind of performance car, is that you take the effort to get out and use it properly. And whenever I do that, I just totally fall head over heels with it again because it's so brilliant across, along a B road or across a mountain road. And so we did this a couple of weeks ago when, what was the storm that we had recently? Storm Arwen or something.
Arwen, yes. Arwen. And there was a B as well. There was a Barra as well. But the first one was the worst one.
It was the first one. So it was a Sunday morning, or maybe it was a Saturday morning, and three of us went out in two cars. I was in my Alpine, and a friend was in, he's just bought a Renault Sport Clio 197, which is, brilliant little thing. So off we went. We started dead early, and... as we were driving out of Bristol through Clifton, I mean, this was probably the sign that we should have turned around. There was an enormous old tree across the road and it had knocked down an old wall. We had to drive around this thing and probably at that point we should have gone, this might not be the morning for this. And of course, the old Severn Bridge, the one towards your house, was closed. So we had to come up with a different route, go over the new one, and then wobble over to the Breckens. And the so the roads were a bit wet, and as you get up onto the peaks, they were icy and frosty and actually had snow and hail on them. And really, that should be utterly terrifying in any car. You should just want to turn around and get back to the bottom where the roads are relatively dry. But somehow, in the Alpine, it just found grip, and it just felt really sure-footed. And actually, I could carry on having fun, just driving through this very thin layer of white, slushy, icy stuff. But the thing that really blew me away was there's a brilliant hill, brilliant road that goes over the hill from sort of Abergavenny to Blaenavon. And right at the start of it, there's this enormous compression. And if you're driving a bit sort of spiritedly, you come into this compression and the car just sits down and you sort of get pinged out the other side. And the A110 loves it. It just, I had one of my best mates in the car with me. And he said, wow, that just soaked that up, didn't it? And the lad behind in the Clio, which actually has been lowered, it's on lowering springs. He just followed me through. He didn't know the road. He just followed me through. And he said it hit the compression so hard that the light up in the roof lining popped out. The glove box flew open and all the stuff came tumbling out. And it was only a little bit later on that we realized, because the car's a bit lower, doesn't have a great deal of suspension travel, you know, very skinny tire sidewalls. It was only a few minutes later we realized there was an enormous bulge, you know, sticking out the side of his tire sidewall. And that was just a very vivid demonstration of why my car is just so well suited to our roads. It just soaks up all that stuff. And his Clio, which is a brilliant car, great chassis on it, but it just could not cope with that demon compression. And it was, you know, after just being reminded how good the thing is and also doing some skids in it around roundabouts and tight hairpins, it's just fantastic. And you've been knocking about in one recently, haven't you?
I have. I was going to talk about the Legend GT, which I'm sure everybody knows, is basically it's your car with the S engine. So how much power has that got compared to yours?
292 horsepower. As opposed to your 248.
Yeah, okay.
There's another 40 horsepower, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's no more torque, is there? So it's just up the top end. And, you know, I haven't gone and done the financial calculations in terms of what it's worth, but I think, if I'm honest, if I could, I would. I thought it was superb in a way that I didn't think the S was, because it hasn't got, you know, it's got the standard suspension on it. The car I really want doesn't exist, which is a Pure. So is yours a Pure?
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I want your car with a hot engine. Now, if you buy a Legend, you have to have the big seats and all the other bells and whistles on it. I don't want that. I want the absolute basic A110, but with a hot engine. And maybe they'll do that at some stage. But I did love it. I did love it. And it's the kind of car that, you know, let us not forget that to this day, it's still the only 10-star car that it's the only car we ever awarded 10 stars to. And anything, if you haven't been in it for a bit, you kind of forget a little bit. And I got back into it. And particularly when what is so great about it is so subjective. And it's just the basically, you know, because you can look at that car on a piece of paper and you think, well, what's all the fuss about? You've got to get in it and drive it and just feel the way that it steers and rides. And then you just know that you are an exquisitely engineered car. And it is. If it suited my life and, you know, everything else that goes on around, I'd have one, as you do.
Well, you sent me a very portentous text message when you had this car saying, is this the last great combustion engine sports car? And we thought maybe it would be. The Amira?
I think I said, is this the last great driver's car?
Yeah, okay. Wow.
Yeah, I wasn't saying this is the last great driver's car, but I think it's a legitimate question to put. Because, you know, neither you nor I, now, you know, to put these things in sort of ultimate infinite terms is clearly silly, because, you know, who knows what the world will have dreamt of in, you know, even 10 years' time, let alone 20, 30, 50, 100. But it's all going to be very different, isn't it? And, you know, and those sort of feels, that feel that you get from a compact, softly sprung, very lightweight car, I don't see where that's going to come from. I really don't. And I hate saying it, but, you know, I can see that there can be all sorts of ways that, you know, very impressive. You know, I was out in America driving the Taycan GTS 3 or 4 weeks ago. Massively impressive car. I mean, you drive it, it's like 2.4 tons, whatever it is. And I drove it around Willow Springs Racetrack, which is a pretty daunting place. And you're just thinking, this is ridiculous. There's no way that a four-door car weighing that much should be this composed around, frankly, one of the toughest tracks there is, for particularly for a road car with no downforce. And so you just think, that's amazing, and you admire it so much. But when you get back to the hotel, get out of it, and go off and, I don't know, do some work or go have a meal or whatever, you're not sitting there thinking about it. You're thinking about, you know, when your beer's going to turn up, or, you know, whether you're going to hit your deadline. It's not, and I'd say this about any electric car. If any electric car was going to, like, stay with you, that one would. And it just doesn't. It just doesn't. It's a device.
Yeah, so your question is a legitimate one. I mean, we hope the Lotus Emira will be excellent. The thing is, with the petrol and diesel ban, what, effectively only 8 years away now? 2030, is it?
Yeah.
And, you know, similar bans in other countries across Europe. But in other parts of the world.
They will ban themselves before then, because nobody's going to be selling, you know, cars on, you know, December the 31st, 2029, because who's going to buy that car?
Colin Goodwin said he would. He wants to be the last person to buy a V8 Corvette, doesn't he?
I suppose, yeah. Colin, he will be, but...
But that's the point, isn't it? With only 8 years left, that's the life cycle of a car. And so, you know, unless it arrives next year, no one's going to go and develop a brand new ground-up sports car like the A110 was, because there just isn't time. There isn't time to sell it for long enough and get your money back.
Exactly.
So it's an interesting point. Do you know what? I drove a couple of cars last week, a couple of electric cars that made me think I can see an EV sports car.
Pray tell.
The face. And I have to qualify it. You know, I don't think it will ever be a proper Sunday. Well, I don't know. I think a great engine and a gearbox that gives you that extra interaction.
I know the cars you're talking about.
Okay, go on then. What am I talking about?
They're BMWs, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah, okay.
They are indeed.
Go on.
So I didn't... Okay, so... I'm not sure we will ever have an electrically powered car that will move us and stir us and excite us in quite the same way. But I am now convinced there can be an electric sports car that is fun to drive to some degree. And for a long time, I just wasn't sure if that was possible. So I drove a BMW i3S, which is not a new car, but I drove it for a good reason that will become clear on the app quite soon. And I actually just like driving a car like that as quickly as I can, even on flowing B roads. I found a few. And to some extent, it was enjoyable. But the other car I drove was an i4, but not the M50 model that you had a go in. And I don't think you were terribly impressed, were you?
I wasn't at all. It felt cumbersome and ponderous and, yeah. So, but I can remember thinking, I suspect the standard car is an awful lot better than this, and you're telling me that it is.
So I didn't drive the M1. So this is the i440. It's the rear drive one, single motor, and I enjoyed it actually. It didn't blow me away, but I really enjoyed driving it. I think what I like about it is that it actually feels very conventional. You know, it just feels like a 4 Series, doesn't it, inside? To sit in and to sort of operate, and it's plenty brisk enough with that single motor. It really does, in the way of electric cars, it really does get going, and that sort of wilts and fades above 50 or 60 miles an hour, but, you know, for the road that doesn't really matter, does it? But I found a car that steered well, that felt really balanced, that felt keen and agile. It just felt like the way a BMW saloon car or sort of four-door coupe, I suppose, the way one of those should feel. Just and well sorted.
And without any M badges on it, without any pretension of that, then
that's
your,
the key.
Your expectations are not there to be shattered, are they?
It seems to me that M and RS and AMG in this new world of ours that we're heading towards will only stand for more performance. It does sort of feel that way. Whereas to people like us, an M should be the most engaging BMW. And it sounds as though the M50 i4 isn't that. But actually, I've thoroughly enjoyed driving the rear driven single motor i4. And also, if you turn off the stability control, it just does skids everywhere, particularly on a sort of wet, greasy road. Every roundabout, every junction, it's just... Well, and of course, because it's almost silent, no one knows you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so...
Come on. Yeah, go on.
And so I stepped out of those two cars, the i3S and the i4, and just thought, I am now convinced that in a purpose-built sports car... So perhaps it's the Alpine that we know is coming. And David Tuig wrote a brilliant piece for The Intercooler about how to make electric cars fun to drive, an electric sports car. And he just makes the case for a car that's as light as possible, that has a modest battery, that has a single motor at the back. He thinks you could get something like that down to 1,300, maybe 1,400 kilos, which is still a good chunk heavier than... an A110, but it's sort of Cayman Boxster territory, isn't it? And I can see myself really enjoying one of those. Maybe not to the same extent as a combustion car, but enjoying it nonetheless. And actually, driving those BMWs just made me feel a whole lot more hopeful.
Good.
We're going to have to persuade you, though, aren't we?
You bet. Can I just briefly trot through some of the cars... that I've driven in the year, and just some thoughts about them. And these are mainly cars that have surprised me one way or the other, probably for positive reasons. So if I had a car of the year, and this is not the best car I drove this year, but it's the car that I guess I was most pleased to have driven. It's the GTAM Alfa Romeo Giulia. Only because... I have been waiting for, and I mean this quite literally, decades for Alfa Romeo to build a car like that. A car, and I, unlike most people, I was not a huge fan of the Quadrifoglia. I thought it was overpriced. Well, I mean, the GTAM is massively overpriced, but I didn't think that dynamically it was that impressive. Well, the GTAM is. It's a proper Alfa Romeo's driver's car. You know, in a way, the 4C wasn't, in a way that, well, we haven't seen from Alfa Romeo for such a long time. You know, since the SZ, I guess. And it just made my heart sore to think that someone somewhere has finally got the bloody message. And, you know, and it's whatever it is, it's more expensive than a GT3. I mean, it's crazy money. And so it doesn't make sense. But even despite that, you know, they've sold out. And you know, that hopefully will tell them something about the kind of cars they should be building. So that's one. Another car that I was very heartened to drive, the Aston Martin Vantage F1 edition. Just because it was, you know, it's that sort of, you know, hoary old cliche about, oh, it's the car it should have been from the start. But this one, it really is, isn't it? Because it's lost almost nothing in terms of, you know, ride and refinement. It's got a bit more power. But the chassis has been completely transformed. I drove it I spent a day up in Anglesey in it, but before I did any of that, I had to get it there. So I had one of those sort of insane 3:30 in the morning, you know, get up, drive literally right through the middle of Wales from, you know, south coast to north coast in it. And it was just superb. I was just sitting there thinking, this is as good an Aston Martin as I've ever driven. Certainly as good a modern Aston Martin as I've ever driven. And it just really, really heartened me as one of the sort of first things that the new regime has come out with. And, you know, I think that is, you know, I think that's very encouraging. And, you know, how much are we looking forward to the V12 next year? So that was another one. Talking of BMWs, M5 CS, did you drive that?
Yes, I did. Monster.
Cracking car. Proper M car. You know, they're quite rare these days. I'm afraid, you know, M cars that, you know, that the, you know, the M2 comp is, I don't know whether it's gone or it's on the way, but, you know, that's not long for this world, is it? So that was fantastic.
Did you actually do much in it on track at Thruxton at our track day? Couple of laps.
I didn't do much because I basically used it to remind myself what the circuit was like because I needed, as you know, I needed to be in some other stuff and that sort of. I wasn't really down there, but it was fantastic to skid about. I was also worried about still having some tires to go home in on. So that was mega. A quick word about a couple of Porsches. New GT3, we've spoken about that lots on here, so I'm not going to dwell on it, but it's an interesting sort of car. It's probably the best car in technical terms that I drove this year. It was awesome on Anglesey. And I don't understand why the ride quality that I found so difficult when I first drove the car, was it earlier in the year or last year, when those first prototypes came over, why that problem has to an extent gone away, because the car is now livable with on the road in a way that the first car I drove wasn't. I spoke to Andreas Preuninger about it and he says the cars are the same, so I don't really understand it. It may be that that first car was a very, very early car, and it may be that it wasn't sort of properly bedded in, but whatever. So the GT3 was fantastic. Mission R, I should mention, talking about electric sports cars, you know, that was really, really interesting. I mean, I drove it at a Porsche Experience Center in Los Angeles, so it wasn't exactly the Nürburgring. And because it cost, is it 8 million euros, 4 million euros, a number of millions of euros, you know, obviously we weren't driving it completely uncaught, but I still think we had 600 horsepower. And for a track car, and I've said this on the podcast before, because there's all that stuff you don't have to think about, like, you know, sort of changing gear or worrying about where you are on the torque curve, that actually made for driving around a track really, really good, because you could just spend much more time thinking about the way the car was handling and spotting your lines and your braking points and that sort of thing. So that was, particularly interesting thing. And is there anything else? Oh, yeah, I'll just finally mention the Ferrari 250 Spider California recreation. Replica, not continuation. So this is the car that GTO Engineering have made, and it's awesome. It's a stunning piece of work. It is the same as the original, but mildly enhanced if you want it to be. So you can have a slightly bigger engine, slightly better suspension. They do put some extra stiffening into the sills to make it more rigid. It was a beautiful thing to drive. I know that Ferrari has now kicked off about it, but I find the whole resto mod thing going forward, as we go into this electric age, I think enthusiasts are going to go the other way. And I think we're going to see more and more of these resto mods. And what I would say is that of all the ones that I've driven, that's probably as convincing in terms of it doing the job you'd want it to do. It's not actually my kind of car, because it's a kind of like a cruisy car. But it is utterly beautiful and it drives sensationally well. And yeah, I love that. And maybe seeing as we're on old Ferraris, I should probably mention the electric Testarossa as well. the little car company's electric Testarossa, which is actually also Ferrari's electric Testarossa. This is the 75% scale electric Testarossa, which is, I mean, it is made from the original drawings from the original 1957 Testarossa pontoon car, and you can order it through your Ferrari dealer, and it's got a Ferrari chassis plate, so it is Ferrari's first EV, and it does 50 miles an hour on a good day. And if you like watching ridiculous handling shots of middle-aged men on three wheels, then yeah, go on the app and you can see me mucking about in that as well. So do you have any particular cars you want to add to that?
Do you know what, whenever I'm trying to remember what I've been up to over the previous 12 months or whatever, I just scroll back through the photo album on my phone, because I always photograph, you know, the stuff that I drive,
yeah,
just for my own sake, really. But yeah, actually, I realised that I've driven some bloody brilliant things this year. I had a really good go in a first generation 997 GT3, the first time I'd driven one of those in 10 years or something. And it's just so great to drive. Surprisingly hardcore, actually. The low-speed ride is actually funny. It makes you laugh. Steering very heavy, clutch very heavy, gear shift very heavy. But once you get going, unbelievably good to drive. The way it steers, the gear shift, the damping, the engine. It's easy to think, actually, with current modern GT Porsches that, you know, these new engines that rev to 9, they are astonishing. But there's still something about the Mezga. When you go back and have a good go in an old Mezga engine,
and that probably revs to the best part of 8, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think beyond 8, 8250 or something maybe.
Yeah, so it's not exactly sluggish, is it?
No, it's not. So that was fantastic. And of course, I had my trip to Italy, to Maranello, including Fiorano, where I drove the SF90 Assetto Fiorano. The following day, I drove a Roma. And I took it to a brilliant road, an hour or something northwest of Modena, to the Palmer Hill climb, where Enzo Ferrari first competed in a motorsport event. It just happens to be a brilliant mountain road. And actually, I thought the Roma was fantastic, more sort of athletic than I was expecting it to be. And just the speed that it had along that road was stunning. And then the following day, it was the 812 Competizione at Fiorano, which is a truly spellbinding car. I've actually only done a handful of laps on track in it, and that's it. But I loved it, and I think it's probably my favourite Ferrari. The reality is, how long is Ferrari going to be able to build NA V12 cars for without some hybrid assistance?
Not long.
It could be it. If that's the way that configuration that has been around for decades bows out, then it's done it in some style. I also drove a prototype 959.
Of course you did. Thanks
to DK Engineering. And I wrote about it on the app. And it was such a cool thing. Not only because it's a 959 and that's just wonderful, but because this was a prototype. And so it was a sort of decontented 959, so it didn't have the adjustable suspension. It didn't have things that made the 959 so clever, like the tire pressure monitoring system and other bits and pieces. And it's the car that I drove, one of only a handful, really just three or four, I think, maybe two or three prototypes in private hands. What made this car special is that it's reportedly the lightest 959 in existence, because it does without so much of the sort of hardware of the customer cars. And it's got mega power, almost 500 horsepower, and it goes like stink. And I'm just wondering, what must that have felt like in 1986 or whatever, when, you know, what's your average family saloon car then?
It would have been a Vauxhall Cavalier.
There you go,
a Ford Sierra, a 1.6L Ford Sierra.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then you've got
like a spaceship,
a near 500 horsepower 959 with sequential turbos. You know, I just can't imagine what that was like back in the day. And we've spoken about it before, but we had that brilliant day with our investor, our friend RS driver, where he let us drive his 3.2 Club Sport, his Carrera GT and his RS4 litre. So, you know, and also you and I had a very memorable day, didn't we, in the Cotswolds. You in an Alfa Romeo 8C and me in an Aston Martin DB3S. And thank you to the chap who made that happen. In terms of the stuff I've driven this year, I feel enormously privileged. I've never had a year quite like it, actually.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we better make sure there's some even more next year. Can we turn our attention to people just for a minute, okay? Because I've been thinking about who my person of the year is, and I'd probably have given a different answer 10 days ago, but I think it's Lewis.
Yeah,
it's interesting, isn't it, on the year that he doesn't even get nominated for Sports Personality of the Year.
Yeah.
And it's because I think this is the year where we've finally seen the ultimate Lewis. He didn't win the championship. We're not going to get back into that. But to me, in terms of the way that he raced, but more importantly, far more importantly to me, the way he conducted himself out of the cockpit, particularly after being robbed at that last race, I just thought he was spectacularly impressive. And, you know, I would never have, I don't think I would have ever called him my person of the year in any previous year. Because, you know, I think you have to be more than a really good racing driver to earn an accolade like that. And I think that he has certainly this year come across as being an extraordinary, you know, human being, gentleman, and sportsman. So, yeah, so he is my person of the year. I also want
not
to
Michael
talk
Massey, then. Let's leave that there. We don't have to go into that.
let's just leave it there. And can I also... just a couple of people who aren't with us. I mean, obviously Frank Williams's passing was very sad for the entire sport. I mean, extraordinary contribution. But actually, and this is just me being selfish because, you know, he was a bit of a mate. I still can't quite believe Murray's gone. And I feel so lucky to have probably 2 years ago now, I went and had lunch with Murray and I hadn't seen him for a while. And we sat down and we just talked for 3.5 hours. And he was on fantastic form. And, you know, so often, and I had this with, you know, I had this with Sterling as well. You know, I don't really remember the last great conversation I had with Sterling. I don't remember the last time we sat down and hooted with laughter. But I'll always be able to remember the last time I saw Murray. And he was on such fine form. And it was obviously an honour and a privilege to do it, but it was just such a pleasure too. Yeah, I just wanted to give him a bit of a shout out as well.
Yeah, we've lost some characters this year, that's for sure.
We have.
Good. Okay, well, I mean,
can I mention one more thing? Sorry.
Okay, go on.
Just while I'm going down memory lane and being spectacularly self-indulgent, I just wanted to say thank you to Max Girardo for letting me drive my dad's Dino. Because that happened this year as well. And if you haven't been on the app and seen the story, my father, when I was about 6 or 7, bought a 246 GT Dino. He couldn't really afford it. I don't think he even particularly really wanted it. He just had this thing about buying a Ferrari before his 40th birthday. And when he was 39¾, he somehow managed to scrape together enough money to buy a very basic standard Dino. And then the oil crisis happened and he really didn't drive the car very much at all. And he had to drive it back to the garage he bought it from. But that's the kind of like the car that got me, it lit my fire, that car. Because to me, aged whatever I was, 7, I suppose, it was the most beautiful, exciting, spectacular, wonderful thing of any kind I'd ever seen. And it came into my life when I was that young and it went out again almost immediately. And then nearly half a century later, it pops up for sale at Girardo's. And I discover this and I go along, expecting to find a Triggers broom, because, you know, those cars have all, you know, rusted, they've all had their engines rebuilt, they've all been pulled together, they've all, so many of them have been restored badly once and have now been restored again properly. But by the end of it, you kind of think, well, how much of the original car is left? And I came and I found this car and it hadn't been restored at all. It had been so perfectly looked after. It hadn't needed it. The engine, the bodywork, you know, it came with, you know, file after file of papers. And I suddenly realised that I was looking at my father's car, not the car that my father's car had once been, but that car. And I went in it and I drove it and it was ridiculously emotional for me. And I can remember sitting it in it at the end when the drive was over, listening to the metal tick and sort of going through all the thoughts that were going in my mind and just sort of idly pressing the button on the side of the glove box and the gloves flipping open. And inside was an 8-track cassette of Simon and Garfunkel's greatest hits. And that was my father's 8-track cassette. And he bought it because we were all into the Beatles, the Who and the Stones, and he was into Beethoven, Mozart and Schubert. And so in some insane way, he thought the middle ground between all of that was Simon and Garfunkel. And so he bought this thing and it was clearly still in the car when he drove it, presumably somewhat miserably, back to the dealer at the end of when he realised he had to sell everything because he'd lost all his money. And half a century later, it's still in the glove box. And then I went home and with my missus, I did all the man maths in the world to see if there was any way we could somehow, you know, mortgage the children or whatever and scrape together the funds to buy this thing. And we just couldn't, which is, you know, fair enough. And somebody else has it now. But I did get a beautifully wrapped little package about 3 days later from Girardos. And it was the 8-track cassette, which I have now. I don't have an 8-track player to play it on, but I guess I can go get one of those. And I don't actually need to, really, because I've got the cassette, and it was a wonderful, wonderful keepsake, a fantastic memory to have of what in many ways is probably the most important car in my life. So that was probably the most extraordinary thing that happened to me in 2021 and in many ways in my working life. So thank you, Max. Thank you, Davila. Thank you, everyone at Girardos, for making that possible for me. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it.
Yeah, and Andrew's too modest to say, so I'll tell you all listening that he wrote a piece about it for the app, the Intercooler app, and it's one of the best pieces we've ever published and one of the best received pieces we've ever published. So if you're a subscriber, or even if you're not, you can go and download the app and start your free trial and read the piece. I promise you it's worth doing. Okay, well, while we're doing thank yous, I just want to rattle through a couple. Thank you to JBR Capital for coming on board as our podcast sponsor. We're hoping to do much more with that partnership next year. And having a proper podcast sponsor on board just means we can do much, much more with this podcast to make it better. Thank you also to all of you who specifically downloaded our last episode about the Abu Dhabi GP, because it was such a hot topic for, you know, a solid week. That episode just did extremely well, and it took us to the top of the UK leisure podcast charts, didn't it? Yes. Above all the gardening podcasts, above all the knitting podcasts.
The Gardener's Question Time podcast. I mean, bizarre. We were, in fact, well, the last time I looked, we were still number one. So thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you to everybody who obviously went and downloaded that, listened to it, and pushed us up the charts. You know, it's important stuff to us, and you know that you can't stay there forever because, you know, there's so much competition out there. You know, there are so many great other automotive podcasts out there. Nevertheless, you know, we have got there and we'll take it. Our first number one.
Yeah, and top of the UK leisure also means top of UK automotive. So it was a big deal to us. But the biggest thank you from me goes to everybody who subscribed to the Intercooler app. We've been blown away by the support, by the reception. It's, as you can imagine, you know, this is my full-time thing now. It's extremely important to me and to both of us, all of us involved. So if you've downloaded the app and subscribed, thank you so much. If we haven't yet been able to convince you to subscribe, we're going to give it a hell of a shot next year. It's just going to be better and better.
And also, if you're worried about what might be under the Christmas tree for you this year, whether it's, you know, another pair of socks, and you're feeling like you've had a bit of a year, and the only way you can guarantee you actually get a really good Christmas present that you're really going to want and you're going to enjoy throughout the year, could I humbly suggest, because I'm sure you deserve it, you buy yourself, or don't even buy it, take out a 3-month subscription to the app and just see what you think. We hope you'll like it. We hope you'll stay with it. We think you will.
Yeah, indeed. Well, there we go. Let's leave it there for this episode, for the year. Merry Christmas, everyone. Enjoy the holidays. Happy New Year. Have a good break. We will be back very early in the new year. So enjoy the break and we'll talk to you then.
Look forward to it. Thank you all.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.